the reason these disturbances, they followed you to a new home, is because it's not the house that's haunted. It's your son.
So 1,100 men went in the war. 316 men come out. The Sharks took the rest June the 29th, 1945. Anyway, we delivered the bomb.
Never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, say, I'll be right back. Because you won't be back.
Get another beer. You want one?
Yeah, sure.
I'll be right back!
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Oh, my name is Robert Hawkins. Approximately 7 hours ago, something attacked the city. You found this. If you're watching this, then you know more about it than I do.
California, stay away from it. Stay away from it. I'll come in here. John Doe has the upper hand.
And on that day, Ahab will go to his grave, but he'll rise again within the hour. He will rise and beckon that all save one shall follow.
They're all gonna laugh at you! They're all gonna laugh at you! They're all gonna laugh at you!
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I'm one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A., and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how's it going, my friend?
I am well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York?
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you, sir?
I'm fine, Phil. How are you?
Doing all right. In the state of Massachusetts?
Hey, everyone. This is Abe here.
Hey, Abe, how's it going, man?
I'm doing okay.
Excellent.
You sound like you're under a pillow, Abe.
Under a pillow?
Yeah. You should get closer to your computer.
Oh, it's weird. I'm wearing my headset. I should be able to...
Yeah, there you go. Sound a little okay. Better now.
Yeah, okay. We were talking about
is
that offline.
Is it a sexy headset?
We were talking about that offline, like, last week, thinking that your headset, you can hear us, but when you speak, it's going to your speaker on your computer rather than on your headset.
Which, as I said, weird, is because headset is described as having a built-in mic into it.
Right.
Yeah, but
don't feel bad. Same thing happened to Phil.
Yeah. You have to fiddle with your sound controller on your Windows. But anyway, no big deal. Just make sure you're near your computer. We're all set. And then we have a Connecticut American.
This is Chrissy.
Chrissy, how are you?
I'm good.
Liar.
I know. Liar. A little stressed out, but other than that, it's things are okay. I'm exhausted. I'm really tired. Like, you know, you go to work.
Yeah, but you made a thing, Chrissy.
I made a thing. Yes, 34 yeah. Orchard is out. The second part of Tidings is on its way to everybody.
Awesome.
Yeah, I wrote a new short story, which I have not had time to sit down and do. I'm just tired. It's a lot of Lysol spraying at work, and it's just endless. It's, you know, I come home and I just want to die. Yeah, well, no, actually, what's really funny is that we ran out of the spray, but Wells Fargo bought from the Kentucky Sazerac Company. I guess they're making all of this alcohol, you know, this alcohol antiseptic hand sanitizer. They shipped it to us in giant, like, Sazerac bottles or booze bottles, whatever. Huh. So we have all these booze bottles, and I was just like, oh, great, okay, watch, so boozing all the mail. Yeah, I'm just spraying alcohol all over the mail. I guess it works, it's fine. But,
so you can just, like, keep a bottle of vodka at your desk, and nobody will even know the difference.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, why the heck do we have to buy non-potable alcohol? Oh, and just so you know, it says clearly on the bottle, do not drink, you know, just in case somebody's like, hey, I'm going to drink this, you know. I don't get why, but whatever. Because it does. It really does
stupid.
Look – they really are stupid, and it does
People
look
are
like
– stupid.
People are stupid.
Well,
people
it is a
suck.
Bottle that's
people
it's
suck.
A bottle that's labeled alcohol.
Yeah,
they don't have to be that stupid to drink it.
Yeah, not to make insult to people, but I mean, like,
oh, I'll insult some people.
Mike Dukakis's wife, Kitty Dukakis, she was an alcoholic to the point where she was doing that, unfortunately.
I mean, usually it's something like that is denatured where they've mixed chemicals in it to keep you from drinking it. I know that's what I have in my lab at school because they don't want the students drinking the ethanol.
You'll figure.
Yeah, that would not be wise, Instead, they'll sniff it. They'll sniff the glue.
There you go, sniff the glue.
Anyways, but all right, so we're making Chrissy laugh, so that's good. Anyway, who are we? For new listeners, we are Dark Discussions Podcast, a podcast that discusses genre films weekly, not just review them, but also critique. So films such as sci-fi, fantasy, horror, thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, arthouse, cult films, drive-in films, and midnight movies. We try to talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. We do have email, darkdiscussions@AOL.com, where you can email us, and we will read your email on the podcast. We have not had many emails recently, though we have had for a spinoff podcast with Mike, which Mike will let us know about at the end of this episode here. Also, we have a Facebook group called Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group where you can join the discussion where we are talking about all things genre. So you can either join in or you could actually start your own topic and people will comment and discuss. Eric, we do have a website, though.
We do. You can find it at www.darkdiscussions.com. There are any number of things you can find on this website. On the right-hand side of the page, you'll find links to Friends of the Podcast, so you can check them out. Up at the top of the page, you'll find a link to an article section where there are articles written by myself and Phil and Mike, as well as others. And then there's also an audio section of the site where you can find every single episode of Dark Discussions, as well as any of the spin-off podcasts available to download for free. There's bound to be something that interests you there, so be sure to check it out.
Did and you say front, for free?
For free.
Dun, dun, dun.
Wow.
Free of charge. On the front page, front and center, you'll find a link to our Patreon account. Patreon is a service that allows you to financially support your online artists, such as us. Producing this podcast is not a free endeavor. We have to pay for things like server space, website hosting, equipment, rentals, so on and so forth. So if you'd like to help us offset the cost of producing this show, that's how you can do it. So you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions. And for every $5 a month that you care to donate, you'll have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly do an episode on. We take all of these submissions from our patrons and on a quarterly basis draw one at random to do a show about. So if you'd like to support us financially, you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions or follow the link on the front page of darkdiscussions.com.
Yep, that's right. We do have two episodes to come, one called Dig Two Graves, a film that stars Candy Cane. Candy Cane.
Candy Cane.
There you go. I was waiting for Eric to do it. He does the best, Mr. Levine. So that's coming, but we're waiting for that to appear back on Amazon Prime or VOD where you can just at least rent it. And then with the Mothman Prophecies, those are coming up soon enough. Also, our last episode, which was 434, that was released, the film After Midnight, directed by Jeremy Gardner and Christian Stella. That film, the director, Christian Stella, the co-director, he actually contacted us on Twitter to give us his opinion and feedback, and he did mention that the monster was actually non-CGI.
Nice.
Yeah, because we were debating and wondering about that in our episode, and so he let us know. So thank you, Christian Stella, and good wishes to you. Appreciate listening to our episode, and hope your movie does well this year. I think that was one of our best episodes of the year so far. It was a pretty fun one. All right, so any other news anybody wanted to bring up before we begin our episode? Anything, notes, deaths, or anything like that? Anyone?
Let's not talk about death, please.
Well, we did.
Well, pass. It's for respect. It's not for.
Yeah, we did lose an actor, an Indian actor, Bollywood actor, but he's done some Hollywood films. probably the biggest profile one was Jurassic World.
I know I was.
Life of Pi. I saw Life of Pi at theaters.
But he was also in Life of Pi and Slumdog Millionaire, both of which had been nominated for Oscars, which I know probably Eric too, but Phil will chime in a second that he doesn't care about. And I'm trying to think of the guy's name, and I feel horrible right now that I didn't have it queued up.
Yeah, me and Eric actually had Life of Pi as in our top 10 of best other genre of that when that film came out in 2012. So that was a long time ago.
I just watched it again within the past year. It still holds up.
Yeah. It does. It was Irfan Khan. That's the guy's name. Yep, exactly, Mike. Yep. Yeah, poor bastard. He was only 53. I guess he had cancer.
Oof.
Yeah, that kind of sucks. Non-coronavirus passing. Unfortunately, it's cancer.
Is it weird that I feel relieved when somebody dies now and it's not because of coronavirus?
Not weird, but...
Well, no.
I kind of have like this, well, he probably was going to die anyway, so...
Hey, even though I'm Mr. Panic out of probably everybody here most, I'm pretty sure that most people that pass nowadays aren't because of the coronavirus. Most people who get the coronavirus... pretty fine.
Yeah, but when you see somebody who's 54 years old,
and passes.
Yeah, if randomly Betty White or Wilford Brimley died tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, fine. But, you know, Irfan Khan at 54, 52?
Right. Well, that's the first thing I did.
Betty White dead, Mike. Jesus.
Damn, I know.
But yeah, the first thing I looked at was to see how he passed, and it was cancer. Yeah, poor bastard. Kind of sucks. Yeah, he was a good actor. He was a really good actor, actually. So rest in peace to Mr. Khan and dibs to his family and friends. All right. Anything else, Mike, did you want to bring up? Anything?
No, we're in a bit of a rush tonight, so I'll leave the other thing to debate until another time.
All right, sounds good, whatever that was. I guess we can get into our topic tonight. So, Eric, why don't you let everybody know what we're going to discuss tonight?
Tonight, we are going to be talking about a Shudder original called The Room.
Not that room.
Not that one. A new one.
the next room over.
Sweet home.
I'm guessing you're not from these parts.
We just moved down from New York. No peeking. Let's give it another try. There's no reason we can't have children.
We already tried twice. Both babies died.
Holy Mary, Mother of God.
Nobody told you? The previous owners. They got killed in this house.
House of blood. God, I need another bottle.
Honey, the real Van Gogh.
Yeah, sure.
Where did you get all this stuff?
The room makes sense.
What do you need most in the world?
I want $1 million. How does it work?
Who cares how it works? You just use it.
The only thing more dangerous than a person that can't get what they want is a person that gets whatever they want.
Get out of the house before it's too late.
Where's the necklace you asked for?
I can always get another. And another. And another.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
I took a shortcut.
You used the room to make a baby.
A baby is not a thing.
Yes, it is. You never take that stuff outdoors. I'm not doing this.
Feel free to leave. Anytime you want.
I want to be with you forever.
Are you afraid of him?
Of course I am. You're not a real person. Man wants to be free. But first, the creator must die.
He said we'd be together forever.
Mr. Room, come with me. Speed.
Mommy.
Daddy.
That's right. The Room. This is a 2019 film. This is not the same Room that Captain Marvel starred in. This is a different film. This film is a French film, as a matter of fact.
It's also not the Room that was had a movie made about it because it was so terribly awful.
Terrible. Yes.
I don't even know that one. Oh, I think I know what you're talking about. But either way, this is a French film. It was released everywhere this year, though it says here in Portugal it was released last year, 2019. Not sure why that matters, even though it says it here. This is a French film, though it's English language, directed by Christian Volkmann, a French director. Hasn't done much high-profile stuff in the English language world until now. Stars Olga Kurylenko. Olga Kurylenko is probably best known as a Bond girl, and she was also in the movie Hitman. She is a Ukrainian ancestry, but a French citizen and resident, so technically I'll say she's French. And then Kevin Janssen is the other star. Kevin Janssen is a Belgian actor of Flemish ancestry. However, he works between both the Flemish and the Walloon side. And obviously he knows Christian Volkmann and Olga Kurylenko because of the Walloon side, which is the folks that speak French. Now, that was fun. I love talking about that stuff. Sorry, Eric. Now, I guess we can discuss how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. So we'll start with the person that originally suggested it, and that is you, Chrissy.
Yes, actually, I heard of it because I got an email from Shudder, because I'm, you know, a member or whatever, and it said, you might like The Room. And I was like, okay. So every time they send me an email like that, I just at least look at it. And I read the description, and I was like, you know, I'm just going to put that on my watch list. And then unlike most people, I have gotten like three times as busy since this virus has hit. So I have had even less time to do things. But I was having a day where I was kind of like, I really need to just turn my brain off. I'm going to try this. And I went into it with very low expectations. And I ended up really loving it a lot. I thought that it was an interesting script. I thought they took, in general, because they took the typical haunted house trope and they kind of combined it with a little bit of Monkey's Paw, but they also combined it with, you know, some of these other horror films that deal with toxic relationships, and it just was a very interesting cocktail to me. I thought it was really atmospheric. I also liked that, I mean, it's not a super deep film, but it does have a lot to say. I think it's an existential film. And I thought it was a really creative idea. It kind of plays with that, be careful what you wish for, but in a little bit of a different way. And so I very much enjoyed it. And I put a thing on the Dark Discussions group, and I put a thing on my Facebook page that if anybody had Shudder and was looking for something, that this is definitely something to check out, just because it is a little bit different and it is interesting. And I also like that there is a mystery sort of at the core of it, because you don't really know what's going on with this house right away or why it is the way it is. But anyway, I'll talk more about themes and all that stuff later. But I just really enjoyed this movie. I thought it was really good. And so when Phil asked me about it, I said, you know, I think there definitely is. This is definitely worth talking about on Dark Discussions. Unlike Polaroid, which I saw a couple of weeks later, which I really enjoyed, but there's not enough there to talk about. But this one has things to talk about. So, yeah, I recommended it. I liked it. I thought it was good.
All right, sounds good. Mike?
Yeah, I watched this maybe it was about a month ago after Chrissy recommended it. And I watched it with my wife. I thought we were going to be doing it a little sooner. Otherwise, I haven't had a chance to rewatch, but I liked it. I liked the I thought it was a clever twist on an old premise. And again, it has to go with, you know, where exactly did they go with the story, you know? So yeah, it is absolutely what Chrissy said. It's an entry into the the wish fulfillment trope, but be careful what you wish for, monkey's paw. I mean, this is, you know, as old as mythology, right? Stuff like, you know, Midas's touch. You know, you get what you want and then end up regretting it. But I thought it was a really interesting take on it. And again, we're not in spoilers, so I don't want to get into that. But just the, and I also just like the fact that they put parameters on it. You always get, in a wish story, like Aladdin, right? You have to put restrictions on it because wishes are such a powerful device. You know, so in this case, the idea of the wish is simply you can wish for any object that can appear within the room in the house. And so that immediately gives you parameters as to what you can look, what you can wish for. You can't wish for world peace. You can't wish for a yacht, you know, but you could wish for, you could wish for a luxury car, but you might have some trouble getting it out of the house. But, I just think it's a fun sort of mental exercise when you put yourself in that. What would you do? How would you handle it? And that's always a great, invitation in a sort of horror film, or speculative fiction film is what would you do in their shoes?
All right. Very good. Abe.
So I heard about this cause this was a film that we had tossing around as a possible subject for, a while, in fact, before we settled on this week being the day we finally discussed it. I watched it today just to keep everything fresh, because everything's been kind of weird now with things being closed down and things being pushed back. So I thought, keep it fresh in mind and have, you know, this is so I don't forget any little details. It's a nice little take on the, as already been mentioned by Mike and Christy, the monkey's paw kind of storyline. Being careful what you wish for, the consequences, and, you know, just what could happen when it falls out of your control, and how powerful even just something can just, it can overtake you and stuff like that. I thought the performances were very strong from both main actors, but I did kind of feel like it was really strong in the first few, for the most part. But there were moments where I kept wondering why, like towards the end, where I kept thinking why they couldn't take advantage since they were within that same row where they were trapped in to use the power to aid them. Without going into spoilers, it wasn't really explained very well. But I did think there was some nice creepy moments that were it was not a gory film at all. There's maybe like one, but really about one or two violent scenes. One of the sexual nature. But it's more about the suspense and more about the human drama and just kind of the questions and, sort of those kind of moral and also just how much can you think you can get before you feel that you can only do you have enough and how far you're willing to wish for, even though you may be pushing certain boundaries into dangerous territories, into things that you might not be able to control if it turns against you. You know, similar to the Micmac burial ground in the Pet Cemetery with the power to resurrect the dead. Overall, it was a good watch. I'm glad we finally got around to looking at it, and I'm interested in, break it down as we go along.
All right, very good. Yeah, for me, I heard about it because of Chrissy when she mentioned it as a potential episode. The reason, as Mike mentioned, he thought it would be an earlier episode than today, which actually is April 30th, 2020, for those folks who are curious when we record this. But I had a screw up with my Shutter account, and I didn't have Shutter for like a month, and I just re-upped it. So I watched it last night. And as Chrissy and Mike mentioned, and Abe mentioned, it's the wish, don't, you know, beware what you wish for theme. All in all, I thought this film was absolutely fantastic, really solid film. Chrissy made an excellent recommendation, kept my interest throughout. there were some tricks in the film that flabbergasted me, and I was like, wow, that's a pretty cool idea, when I discovered what it was about. The acting was great. The story was great. The direction was great. The set design, the building they're in is really cool because it's really just a one building movie. This could most certainly be a top 10 horror film of the year for me. I was always interested in the film anyway because Olga Kurylenko is an actress that I've been following for years, ever since I saw her in the movie Hitman. I usually check out some of her films as they come out. This film was definitely one of her best. Big thumbs up for me. Eric.
This movie was a mixed bag for me. I first heard about it because of Chrissy. And for the first 30 minutes I was watching this movie, I was really mad at you guys for making me watch it. I was not into it at all.
See why you wouldn't be.
Had I been checking it out on my own and we'd not been doing an episode on it, I might have turned it off. But I kept going, and about 30 minutes in, I started to see hope. And it got a little more interesting, and then about an hour in, it got really interesting, and then it got super freaky bizarre for a while, and then wrapped up with an ending that leaves me with more questions. It'll be interesting to talk about. If they could like shorten that first 30 minutes of the movie to like 10, I might be more willing to recommend it. I'll give it a conditional recommend of getting through the first 30 minutes to see the rest of it. I gave it a 3 out of 5 on Letterboxd. So I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it either. And there's about 45 minutes of a really good movie in there.
All right, very good. Eric, do we have a wiki for this?
Wiki. All right. Matt and Kate buy an isolated house. While moving, they discover a strange room that grants them an unlimited number of material wishes. But since Kate has had 2 miscarriages, what they miss the most is a child.
Thank God I went in completely blind.
That's
didn't see the trailer.
Horrible.
That is awful, because that's one of those things that I want to talk about when we get to spoilers that I thought was really a nice reveal because they didn't. I'll talk about that, but that sucks. That really sucks.
Yeah, I went in completely blind, didn't even read the blurb or anything about the film except I knew that Olga was in it, and that was it. And so everything was a surprise to me, and I'm glad I didn't read that. Unfortunately, we probably ruined it for the listeners who but again, this is right on IMDb, and we're just reading it right from there. So it's
yeah,
not.
Oh,
and by the way,
Shutter
Phil,
description has yes. that.
Shutter too. Yeah, okay.
If Hush is the movie about asparagus, then this is the movie about people chewing too loudly.
I didn't notice that. I didn't notice that.
Yeah, I didn't pick that up either.
Yeah.
That's what the movie's about.
Okay. Because I didn't – that was a nice twist I was not expecting. I can tell that clearly these are not people who watch horror movies in this horror movie. Because
right.
There is no way that's coming out well.
Right.
Anyway, all right. So I guess we'll discuss, you know, generally anything about the film or I guess its influences before we get into that true spoilers about the film. So this is just a preliminary before we throw the spoiler alert up. The film basically takes place in Maryland, state of Maryland, because I looked up where Carroll County – Winchester or whatever the town was that the house.
Didn't they say at the beginning of it that they were in upstate New York?
Yeah.
It's, It's supposed to be in upstate New York, but I was trying to find a filming location on it.
Yeah, but what happened was is they said that at the beginning, and I thought that too. But then when she's talking to her mother, she's talking about how I'll come back to New York, you know, later this summer or something.
I think she meant New York City.
Yeah, but you know what?
It's a fake county and city because the only Carol Winchester is Maryland.
But you know what? I just caught this. That's interesting, Phil, because we might have just caught an error because there's a line later where the guy says, you know, something about the house and the husband says, oh, yeah, we moved down from New York.
Yes, exactly. That's what I'm talking
about. And I was like, what the fuck? They're upstate. Like, so who knows? That was interesting. Maybe there is an error. Maybe they originally were going to Maryland or something, and they changed it for whatever reason. I don't know.
That's really interesting.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. It's picking nits, but it is kind of interesting. I just find that stuff interesting. But anyway, move on.
Yeah, so you noticed the same thing I did, too, because I heard that line, too, and then all that other stuff. And then I said, all right, then if they moved down from New York, and then I looked it up on the internet and Maryland popped up. So I was like, all right, so maybe they're in Maryland. So either way, it doesn't matter. You're absolutely right. I mean, it's just an interesting thing that astute viewers like myself and Chrissy even noticed.
Mm-hmm.
Pat yourself on the back.
You mean obsessive about geography? Yes.
Indeed.
Now, one thing I really did like is that the entire setting is titled an Eldritch location, which is usually like an otherworldly kind of place that is beyond understanding, kind of mysterious, and in possession of some kind of really almost dimensional or cosmic power. Because what this couple defines is something that is what you would almost see in a Lovecraft story. Something that is absolutely almost out of this world. And one that mystery remains throughout the entire story.
Right. Yeah, and I got to say that I did enjoy, I kind of enjoyed the fact that they never really try to explain why the room is or how the room is. And also, I just enjoyed the design of it. The weird ass lock and the door and the fact that it seems to be electrical in nature. The whole thing was very weird and inexplicable, and I liked that about it.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Abe.
Oh, I was going to say that, it kind of felt at times when they were digging through it, almost felt like they were inside something alive. Like when, he's breaking through the walls and going through it. He's almost like he's going through his guts and his veins and stuff like that. Like it's almost like another being in of itself, and its power and its ability to control things within a boundary.
Yeah, I think I really loved that. First of all, Eric, I agree with you. I like that they didn't explain it. And you know, one of the downfalls I think about some horror stories or some horror movies or some, you know, short fiction, I see a lot of it. People tend to want to feel they need to explain everything. And sometimes that just takes the magic out of it. You know, we don't explain why the Wicker Man community and the original Wicker Man is the way it is. We don't explain why that was like that movie I watched the other week, the Irish film. I forget what it was called.
Oh, Sea Fever?
No, that was us, Phil. Wakewood?
Wakewood. Yeah,
Wakewood. Right. I really like that because it was the same thing. They never explain it. Like, they don't, they're just like, this is it. This is the way it is. And I think that's because the story isn't really about its setting. It's really about the people. And the matrix that this house became, I agree with Abe, it was very steampunk, but there was also something organic about it. But also, Abe, it was kind of Lovecraftian in a weird way.
Very much.
Kind of the way it looked. And so you were talking about the Eldritch stuff, and I was like, I could see that because, yes, they're not in an Eldritch location maybe, but the house itself could be considered Eldritch, I think. Yeah. And as the film progresses, it almost does become its own living thing with a personality in a very parasitic way. And there's this whole idea of what they create. It's almost like it's the soul of the house, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's almost a kind like House on the Hill minus the ghost. It is basically the house. The forces, whatever is powering this room, is given a presence, almost like individual entity to this house that thrives on its usage. And several times, many times throughout the story, every time a character makes a wish, whether it's a single wish or multiple successions, we see later on, the house begins to kind of brighten up and vibrate and become and pulsate with power. And it gives you, it makes you wonder if the more usage it gets, the more power it can exert in the possibilities, because later on we see that how far people can take the wishes is just beyond calling in a singular item.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, because at one point we had a character, I won't go spoil things, but we get into it. Pretty much create the entire new space that none of the characters had originally thought of trying.
Right. I mean, there is some flaws, and I think it may have been you, Abe, that brought it up, which is the people in the house didn't use the powers to stop the problems, because the there was a few times where I said, why don't they just do this? And they didn't do this. And it's like, you think they would do this?
Yeah, there were some moments where I kept wondering why they couldn't do it. And it would have made that's why I felt how the last act kind of faltered for me.
Yeah. There were a few moments in this movie that I couldn't really rationally explain the behavior of the characters either. But it is a movie.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, well, that sort of occurred to me, but there is that scene where after she creates the baby, right,
mm-hmm.
he's like, go into the room and wish it away. And she struggles with that. But while they're in there, the kid is screaming and screaming and screaming. And I'm almost wondering if the house gives you something, especially since it kind of like seems to put its soul into the child. Is it really, I mean, it grants material things, and she argues with the husband and says, but it has a soul, you know? So I'm almost wondering if maybe that was maybe not intentional. I could still see it as a flaw, but I'm almost wondering if there's like an unspoken rule there or something where like the house decides, like if you wish for something the house gave you to take it away, because it's clear this house is parasitic. So it obviously wants people in it. So I'm not sure about if it would allow it. Do you know what I mean?
But is it? I mean,
I don't think it's parasitic. I think it's just there, and then the power of getting whatever you want is the drug, not the house influencing them.
Yeah, I agree with Phil because. During that whole montage scene where everybody's enjoying all the material items and the drinks and all the party and stuff like that, made me think a lot about that the montage in the Dawn of the Dead, where the characters, after getting a hold of the mall from the zombies, they're enjoying all the stuff and everything like that, and eventually that euphoria wears off. And then you suddenly see the characters in both films tired, bored, unfulfilled, and just wondering what next.
Right, yeah, because there's a scene where they're out on the swing set in the backyard, and he asks the wife, "Where's your necklace? You know, your diamond necklace you got?" And she goes, "I probably lost it, but I can just get another, and another, and another." And so there's almost like an ennui, because, like you said, you know, it's boredom in a sense.
That is one thing I do want to talk about. The first of all, the necklace is a three-beat, but part of a three-bait, but also you're right, Phil, it's not only the ennui of that, but it's also this whole idea that sometimes when we don't really have that thing we really love, if we are not granted by fate or the universe or whatever, that thing that we desire most that maybe isn't material, we try to fill our lives with material things. And yet those eventually reach their end. And I just thought that was a very interesting commentary on the human condition, that that is a very human thing. You know, like, okay, you know, I don't know who my dad is. I'm never going to know, right? So you always fill your plate with this activity and that activity or this material thing or shopping or whatever. It's almost a comment on addiction to fill the hole that's in you that will never be filled. So that was one of the things I did want to talk about with this. But anyway, go ahead. But you're right, yeah. Phil, exactly. It's that ennui. It's like, it doesn't matter. The thing that really is going to fulfill her, she can't have, or she feels like at that moment she can't have.
Well, there's also satisfaction to be had in how you achieve a thing, right?
Right.
You know, it would be great if, you know, I could say, you know, I wish I could be a great piano player or something like that. But how satisfying would it be knowing that I kind of cheated to get that, as opposed to the people who have, you know, earned it through years and years of dedication and practice and hard work.
Though you can argue that some people are predestined to be better piano players, while some people just can't because they have fingers or they just don't have the talent, or, you know, like singing, you know, or sports.
Right.
Even if you don't practice, you'll never make it. But if you practice, you will. However, a person who doesn't have the ability to do any of those things and they practice all they want, they're never going to do it.
You know, I'm reminded of a quote from I think it was Amok Time in Star Trek. It was the quote that having is not so satisfying as wanting.
Mm.
And I think that's an interesting idea. I don't know if that was originally from Star Trek, but it's where I know the quote from. And I wasn't able to find its original source. If it wasn't from Star Trek. And yeah, I mean, they get to have anything they want, but you know, at some point you stop running out of things you really want. You know, you have it. And then, well, now I've got it, what do I do next? And since you don't have to, we like to have things to do. And sometimes it's pursuing things. Like if you have a hobby, sometimes just chasing after the thing, if you're a collector or whatever, it's the chasing after the thing, the grabbing, or maybe, you know, grabbing it and finally obtaining the thing that you've been looking for.
You know,
the thrill of the hunt is just as important as, you know, having your stamp in your stamp book or the record in your collection.
But also, in this case, the things, I mean, he seems like he's fairly straight with what's going on anyway. So whatever for him, whether he has this or not, I think he's okay. But it's her, meaning the wife character, that has something that isn't what they've been wishing for during their montage scene, and that's the child. And that is the thing that she will be fulfilled with, while all the other stuff is secondary to her, even if it is millions of dollars or whatever. The problem, though, I felt that was an interesting theme because, yeah, okay, that makes sense. But also, there's a scene where he says, there's nothing wrong with me and there's nothing wrong with you. The doctor said so, so we can just try again. But also, and I'm assuming this is modern day, even though we don't have cell phones, I'm pretty sure it's modern day. There's, you know, intravenous and all these other things, and it appears they haven't even tried any of that yet. So I don't know why they hadn't tried that yet. You know what I'm saying? It was like almost like she was a defeatist at that point. Like, we're never going to have kids. And
well,
he wasn't so convinced.
And that's part of my issue with the movie, is that there's a lot of character behavior in this movie that I just don't, I can't wrap my head around. And that's probably number one on the list, is that this woman is like pretty much horrified when her husband suggests trying to have a baby again. But then she goes and wishes one into existence without consulting him. And it's just like, what?
Well, Eric, actually, on the feet as a female on this podcast, I can totally explain to you why that actually does make sense. It wasn't that she did not want another child. It was that
you mean an attempt for another child.
She didn't want to go through because, you know, they had had two miscarriages, and it was, I'm guessing that it was probably the miscarriages were probably later in the term. I just, from the way that scene is written.
The way they spoke about it, they didn't use the word miscarriage. They say the babies died.
Yeah.
It's a very specific language choice.
Yes. And so that's why I'm because I'm assuming that the babies actually weren't born yet. So I'm thinking maybe they were stillbirths.
Right.
Or something. And that is a horrendous thing, let alone for a gentleman to go through, for a woman to go through, to give birth to a dead baby. That is
no, I understand that.
Horrible. So
I just don't understand how you would be okay with a baby that was wished out of nowhere.
Because to her, she always wanted a live baby to cuddle and live, and after she'd planned and dreamed this child's future, she wanted the baby. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. She didn't want to go through of maybe having to go through that trauma again of losing a third one. That to me made sense. In other words, she didn't want to take the risk of having to go through that again, but she wanted to have the happiness that she felt had been wrested from her. And she was afraid of going through that again is really how I read it. But yeah, go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And obviously not every woman is the same, but I've certainly known, I'm a teacher. I work with an awful lot of women. But I've been friends with a lot of women and dated a lot of women where, having a baby is a big thing. You know, it's a big thing. It's a thing that obviously a lot of girls are conditioned with almost since birth, right? Getting a baby, babysitting when, you know, getting like baby dolls to take care of, you know, helping take care of younger children in the family if they have them, or babysitting when they're, you know, when they're a teenager. And it's a thing that yes, it's a bit of both, but it's something that is a mindset that most guys don't consider. Guys don't really think about it because, like, I mean, I've never dated anybody where they didn't, like, already have, for the most part, they wanted to have children. They already had, like, they knew how many children they were going to have and what they were going to name them, even though, you know, that wasn't necessarily what was going to really happen. It was a thing they had planned on. I don't know many guys who, even if they want to have children, said, I want to have two boys and a girl, and they're going to be named this. And we don't think of it that way. And I've known enough women who have had miscarriages, and you know, they are a little evasive in whether they talk about it as a miscarriage or, you know, a postpartum fatality. But obviously, either way, it's very traumatic to someone who's had a miscarriage. And
I understand all that. I think I presented my point in a manner that everybody's misunderstanding it.
No, I understand. I'm on your side.
The bigger point I was trying to make is that I personally would not be able to live with a child that I knew had been wished out of thin air.
Well, because you have seen horror movies, so you understand.
Even if I hadn't, you've that's read just Pet fucking Cemetery. Creepy. That's like, where did it come from? What is it? What made it? Yeah, I wouldn't be able to deal with that personally.
Yeah, but she could.
So it seemed like an odd choice to me. That's all.
And some people are very short-sighted. I would certainly think the fact that she could say such a thing and so impulsively, mm-hmm. or seemingly impulsively, I think that says something about her character. And that may just be a thing. Like if this was a car, maybe they would have, you know, sat down and done some comparison shopping. But it also speaks to her desperation and how much she wanted it and the realization that she can have it this way. And again, clearly they have not read the stories.
But again, this
is a thing that they could have figured out. What might, you know, if they had this conversation, if they had this discussion, something like, "Oh, hey, you can have a baby here without a soul."
And that was the other part of it, is that she just like did it, and like the husband brought up the idea of having a kid, and she was like, "I don't want to go through that again." And so he packed off, but then she just like went and did that without even having a conversation about it, which seemed a little weird.
Right. And also, as she said, he said, you know, there's nothing, the doctor said there's nothing wrong with either of us. So they could try it again. And if it didn't work, they could try other means as well. And she just seemed, impulsively said no, and then impulsively 2 hours later, there's a baby created out of thin air.
Right. But I also know there's a lot of women, when they can't have a child or can't successfully have a child or they miscarry, there is for a lot of women a sense of personal failure. That they blame themselves in a way that the husband never will or the father never will.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the psychology of it as a male. I don't know if I can articulate it that well. But I totally get where she was coming from in this film. But again, it's that thing of sometimes, as another great philosopher once said, you can't always get what you want.
You get what you need.
Right. Well, and that's the other thing too, is that the moment they discover, the child can't survive outside the house, it's almost inconsequential. It's life, in a sense, at least in my opinion. And if I was the father, I would have just picked the baby up and brought him outside and let it deteriorate back into the fake existence that it was in the first place. And also,
did.
Yeah, right. And he should have done it another time when she wasn't around, or they should have discussed it. They didn't have anything about that. They didn't have a scene where they sat down and said, you know, he can't ever leave the house. This isn't a life, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
She figured it out, and they kept that information from her.
Oh, yeah. It was.
Well, we're starting to get into spoiler territory.
Yeah, we
should.
Yeah.
Why don't we throw up the flag?
Yeah, so we'll just talk about everything and anything at this point. And folks who want to see the film, it's Shudder. It's available right now. All right. So as I was saying, it's like, but he finally does shows what happens, or they figure out what happens. And at that point, you would think they would sit down and say, all right, this ain't going to work, right?
Well, here's the problem. He only starts showing to her after she tries to go outside with the kid, the baby, and then which starts to age. Then he starts showing her what happens. Cause he's
right.
Just like, I have reasons for that you shouldn't go out, instead of saying, if that baby goes out there, you're gonna lose it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
these two suck at communicating.
Either way, she now knows. And yet, they don't have the scene where they sit down and says, what are we going to do? I mean, he can't ever leave the house. This is a fake existence, just like the money and the paintings and everything else that we did. You know, obviously her diamond necklace, she didn't lose. What happened was they didn't show the scene, but when she was outside on the swing, it must have deteriorated and just fell off and became dust, and she didn't even notice it.
Right.
So the thing is at that point, you would think she would be a realist and understand what's going on and say, yeah, you're right, this ain't going to work. And then later, when they figure out that the boy as well can start wishing, that at that moment, I say, all right, we got to get this. I'm going to wish the boy gone, or I'm going to bring him outside and get rid of him, because all he has to do is, like he said later, the father says later, he could wish a dragon. He could wish us dead. He could wish our drink to have poison in it. I mean, you know, you just don't know. And it's like, I don't know. I wouldn't be too happy.
Even without those, it shows just how unprepared they are to have a kid. Because the husband.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's true.
Because the husband, you know, he's not happy about the whole thing, and he becomes pretty much a hermit in his room, just painting black marks around the floor, buying a gun, while she's trying to struggle and teach his kid, who's already jumped up, the kid's 6 years old, seven?
Yeah.
Yeah, about that age. So he's already jumped over past points, so she's now struggling to discipline him, but she hasn't had those years to really instill any,
I don't know if I agree that they aren't ready to have a kid. I think they were ready. It's just that he didn't accept the kid because he knew that his kid, it's a kid from, as Eric said, out of thin air. It's like, this ain't, and he also knows that it's going to die if it walks outside. And she, I guess, is prepared, but then when it jumps up 5 years in one day, obviously, yeah, she's not going to be prepared.
They agree on having the kid this way. And they have agreed on having a kid the usual way. So they weren't cooperating. They weren't being a team. So they're completely divided at that point. So they weren't ready.
Yeah, I think there is psychologically, Phil, you're the only one here as a parent, so maybe I'm full of shit. But, when you're going to have a kid, usually you have, a 6 to 8 month heads up that this is coming. Right. You have time to mentally prepare, to physically prepare, right, to get the house together.
The nesting process begins.
The nesting process, right, but it's also to think about things, how will you handle this, how you will handle that. And, when you do get the baby, it's a starter set. You're not getting like a teenager, which would be which is a lot messier in other ways. You can make mistakes with the infant that they'll have completely forgotten about by the time they're five. The parenting evolves, right? And they're being thrust forward.
That's the reason why orphans usually aren't adopted as easily as a newborn, right? Because, a 6-year-old, 7-year-old, 10-year-old, whatever, have a personality that may not meld with the family. And so a lot of older children, a lot of parents are scared to adopt them because they're worried about that versus, say, a baby who is impressionable.
Well, there's that, but there's also, but even then you can't, like, I can't just go out, even if the plague was not happening, like, Pam and I could just go out and said, hey, you want to go out and buy a baby today? You can't do that, at least
well,
not
in this.
You
just don't know the right people.
You just don't know that. it is a very long and involved process. You have to show you're ready and prepared for it. It's not like, if you want to go out, and buy a car, you could do that without saying you've thought it through. You can't, they are being, and this is goes to her being short-sighted by dumping this on him without him being prepared and ready for it, without consulting with him, without really thinking it through. It's an impulse buy, and babies are not impulse buys in this country.
Well, it wasn't even the baby that was the problem for him. The problem was, it wasn't a baby that was done as he would have expected. Instead, it's a baby that came out of thin air, which is it's not a real baby. It's not ours. Whose is it? What is this? Then we find out, that everything dies when you take it outside. So it's like he's freaking out right from the beginning. If she came to him and said, "Hey, I'm pregnant," I think he would be fine with that, but that's not what happened. She came with here's
he
the
came
baby
home
that
and
I
there was a baby there.
And yeah,
that it came from magic and supernatural forces, and not as a normal baby would come from it. And I think that's the problem. And then he goes into his tunnel vision after that for the next 30 minutes of the film, and because he doesn't want to confront his wife and fight her, but he can't deal with this thing, and that's why he freaks out and he starts doing his investigations into the people in the house and starts tearing the walls to see what the makes this work, because this is now a problem. It's not, you know, a fun thing like having, you know, Dom Perrier and millions of dollars that you can burn like paper. So I think it's a little different. I think it just was there, and it's not her coming up to him and saying, honey, I'm pregnant. And then, oh, congratulations. Let's go, you know, celebrate.
Right.
Well, and there's an interesting thing too I wanted to bring up as long as we're talking about this. There, you know, the first kind of foreshadow, they did some interesting things with technique here with like foreshadowing. There, you know, she finds the dead bird in the closet, and birds are symbols of the soul. And it also looks like it's a parrot or something.
It was a cardinal. And I thought it was in the kitchen.
It wasn't.
It's in the kitchen pantry. Yeah, the kitchen pantry.
Oh, okay.
There.
Pantry.
It's a little. Yeah. That's what I meant. Kitchen
pantry.
It was
pantry. A cardinal, though. It was
closet.
A cardinal.
Really? No, I didn't think so. It looked like a bird that somebody had wished for, because when she takes it outside. Yeah, I think it was like some kind of parrot or something, but it was obviously a pet that was left there by the last owners and then it died or whatever, because when she takes it outside, she puts it down, and then that's our first indication that something isn't right, because he calls her and she turns to look at him and she turns back and the bird is gone.
This is the next.
So it was wished into existence. It was wished into existence. And so that is foreshadowing, particularly because the bird, not so much foreshadowing that stuff disappears when you take it outside the house or it turns to ash. It's more foreshadowing in that if you create a live thing, you know what I mean? The soul, the soul is not going to last. So yes, it is going to disintegrate outside, but a live thing that you create inside is just as susceptible as a material thing to just completely vanishing into nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And I thought that was really interesting, especially since they chose a bird. And birds have long been known or associated with carrying the souls or communicating with the souls. I mean, ravens and crows are considered, you know, messengers of the dead.
Well, also
in some cultures. Yeah. And also, like, you have the – I think it's Judaism, or anyway, in Jewish mythology, I'm pretty sure there's this thing called the guff, where the sparrows like go and carry the souls. And so like, if you see a sparrow, I know I've talked about this on this podcast before, but if you see a sparrow, it's supposedly a sign that, you know, there's a new soul coming into the world. A lot of horror movies use sparrows, by the way, Seventh Sign, a lot of them do.
Another thing I want to point out, Christy, is that they're also representative of freedom as well.
Good point.
Which is, I think, symbolic of the child character, Sean, because he's often looking
Shane,
at...
Shane.
Okay, Shane, Sean, Chambalan. So, anyways, one thing is that this, Shane, is that he wants to get out into the open world and see everything, but his parents are trying to keep him safe, and it's almost like a cage. It's a cage, and he can't go out there. And because he will perish, as the bird will. And I think the bird is kind of almost a symbolism of anything with it from born from this house can never be free from this cage.
Oh my God, that is so cool. I did not even pick up on that. That's awesome. Yeah, that would make sense. Totally. Because they could have picked anything, right? They could have picked a cat. They could have picked a dog. Like, they could have picked anything. They picked a bird.
A mouse.
That's really cool. A mouse. Yeah, that's cool. It's very cool.
And it did make me think of, you know, we've seen movies of like children who were sick, you know, and so they like stuck at the window looking out. They can't go outside and play with friends. And this is literally kind of the thing that's going on here, is that here's the kid who's stuck inside. He can't go outside or he's going to die. But it's going to really suck for the kid. The problem is kids in those stories also don't have the power to have access to a wishing room that can completely give them anything they want.
Yeah.
Which I loved that. by the
before
way.
Before we get there, there's one thing about this, one aspect of this movie we haven't touched at all yet, that I just want to talk about briefly, because I thought the coolest moment in the entire movie for me was with John Doe, because he's been investigating the house and finds articles about this guy that killed his family there and whatever, and goes and visits him in the mental hospital. My favorite scene in this whole movie is when John Doe calls him.
Oh, yeah.
And his wife is eavesdropping on the extension.
Yeah.
And he starts quoting Nietzsche and tells him what the deal is. It's like, oh, fuck.
And you find out who John Doe really is.
Oh, my God, yes.
It's like, no way, he's Shane. Oh, my God, that's awesome. Also, earlier he says, so you got all the money and the booze and did you get woman, too? And it's like, oh, a woman, Sophie Turner and Scarlett Johansson. Lately. No, but on a serious note, I agree, Ark. Those scenes were the best, and I wish they had gone further into it, because originally I was worried that those scenes would be bad, because those scenes would be something like, you go to in all horror films where they do the trope where they get on the internet and they read back and they go to the library, you know, all that stuff. But once they bring in John Doe himself and he starts speaking, and then you find out who he really is, meaning he was himself a wish child.
Right.
And he found out his own existence. But we also find out he didn't really murder the parents either, which, assuming he's telling the truth.
Well, he didn't, one of them.
But either way, he says the best line also, which was, then you can go free and you can live a life and land up in a mental institution your whole life like most people. That was good. That was the first twist that made me say this movie's awesome. When you find out who John Doe is.
And that, Eric, I need to agree with you. That was my absolute favorite moment in the movie, too, is when he called. Because I was like, oh, fuck. Like, it was really good. I actually got a chill when that happened. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, and it was made better by the fact that she was listening on the other line. Because he lays it out for him and then pretty much asks him, so are you going to kill your wife or your son? And her wife goes... He's like,
honey. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. It's like for him, I don't think he had any issue with the choice. I think he had no problem to get rid of the son.
Oh, absolutely.
He didn't want to do it because then he would alienate her and she wouldn't love him anymore. But that's the one thing about the film that bothered me is they never had that sit down conversation.
Well, I said, these two suck at communicating.
Oh, yeah. They're awful.
I understood a lot of some of the non-communication where you have communication issues, and I could even understand, just because some of it's very sensitive topics or you're not really sure how to broach it. Like, I'm not sure how you broach, dear, we need to kill the boy. I'm not really sure how that's, that's an easy topic, unless he's just did something really awful. Like, you just wait for him to color on the walls or something. Say, hey,
after he starts wishing shit into existence.
Right, when she's understanding that their hands are kind of forced. The one that just drives me nuts, and that did drive me nuts when I was watching it, was the, honey, you can't let him go outside, but I can't tell you because it would take way too long to explain.
Oh,
you're just going to have to trust me.
Yeah, I was like, geez.
Yeah, that was dumb.
Because I'm under a deadline in my art studio up here, and I can't possibly take a moment to explain to you in the words that I just expressed now, telling you how I can't explain it.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
it's taking shorter to explain than my non-explanation.
Right. That's the thing. We're explaining it as neither of them knew how to communicate, which is somewhat of their character flaw. But, again, we're talking about a film that takes place like in a month and a half to 2 months. There was plenty of opportunities that they would have just sit down, whether it's pillow talk, whether it's at breakfast, whether, you know, anywhere where he would have said something and explained the whole situation.
Well, to be fair, he did just discover it earlier that day while she was out of the house, I believe. He hadn't had a whole lot of opportunity to tell her yet. But he definitely should have gotten it out of his fucking mouth before she walked out the door.
Yeah, because really, all he had to say was, anything that leaves the house that we create here turns to ash.
Yeah. Right.
That was all he had to say, one sentence, and I completely agree with you.
Yeah.
Right. And then he could have just showed it. He could have just went over to the wall, grabbed one of the paintings, and threw it outside, and she would have saw what happened.
Right.
And then he could have said, "That's what's going to happen to our son," and so his existence is fake. It's just right. In this small 4,000 square foot home, and that's it. And then that's it. It's not existence.
Right. Well, I don't know about that, but
it's an existence, obviously, but it's like Abe said, it's like you're stuck in 4,000 square feet. It's like a prison. You can't experience the world. He's never going to get married. He's never going to, anything.
Well, and you know damn well the kid would have made it outside eventually.
Eventually,
does at one point, and he actually had to bore up all the goddamn windows.
Yes, that's right. And then also another problem too was, and that's another thing. She starts boarding the windows up without her husband's consent or discussion, I should say, not consent, but without. And he's going, "What are you doing? You're not." And she doesn't even explain it. But the other thing too is once he wishes the snowman and the forest, at that moment, I would have said. He's gone. The kid's got to go because he could wish us dead. He could wish us anything. I mean, he's, and the thing is that the kid, as the husband says, he specifically said it to her. He says it to her. He goes, he could wish a dragon and who knows what would happen. He could wish, even if he's just nefarious and he's just wishing stupid things like, "I wish Frankenstein was here. I wish there was a vampire."
Right.
And
then you wish, and then you say, I wish I had 100 vampire slayers," or whatever he could conjure up, you could conjure away
if you're there.
Yeah,
if you're there. I think the thing
is, the room and wished up the whole forest while they weren't around.
Yeah,
and then suddenly you walk around a corner and you get killed with a machete.
Your wife could do that too.
Was here.
But your wife isn't going to do it because she ain't a sociopath, nor is she a person with a 6-year-old mind.
Yeah, well, that's
the problem.
That's
that's the real issue. And the thing is that it's not even really a 6-year-old mind, right? Because he became 6-year-old in 5 minutes from the age of a baby, and so who knows?
Yeah, and that was one of the things I had a little bit of an issue with as far as this movie goes. Because I understand it's just a conceit they're putting in the movie to move things along. But if you have a being that's existed for 3 months, no matter how old their body is, they aren't going to suddenly gain the ability to talk.
it's magic. When he wishes for the Mona Lisa, I don't think he had to stop and describe or show a picture of the Mona Lisa to the room. The room knew it. There's something in the room that does have access to outside knowledge. The kid is clearly connected to the room, as a product of it. I could excuse it away that way. It's all magic with the thin veneer of technobabble over it and the wires and shit in the walls.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, no, and that's fair, Eric. That's fair. I mean, those are little things or big things, depending on your perspective, that can make you, scratch your head and say, "Well, I mean, some people say it's just nitpicks, but I don't know."
It is a nitpick, and that's it's fair to call me out on that. However, I've said this in the past. If you have a movie that's totally grabbed me, and I'm entranced, I'm less likely to focus on those things. Like I think we talked about it when we were discussing the movie A Quiet Place. That is by no means a perfect movie. There are things you can point out in that movie that don't make sense according to the rules of that world. However, I was so into it that it didn't even occur to me to think about it. Whereas this movie, I wasn't as much into it, and it did occur to me to think about it. That's all.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I was thinking about things too. I was thinking the whole movie. I was thinking, why doesn't the father just take the kid outside and have him turn into dust? Or why doesn't the father just wish him away? at that point. Or
taking him outside and turning him to dust. Yeah, I was kind of questioning why the dad didn't do that. Although there is a moment earlier in the film where she says something to him like, you're going to start drawing again and forget everything else exists. And I think he's just maybe the artistic type that probably gets so wrapped up in himself that he really can't even focus or do the horrible thing because he's just so obsessive. Like, he turns to his own obsessive, like, patterns and ignores trying to figure out a solution.
Perhaps. You know? But there was that great scene where the dad finally tells the kid what's up, and I was waiting for him to end that speech by chucking the kid out the front door.
Right.
Sadly, that did not occur.
Well, there's also another moment where during the final chase scene, I kept thinking somebody was going to use a wish for something more, like getting a weapon or something like that. Or, I don't know. As
right, right, yeah. I wish for a
lightsaber.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, or some of a velociraptor to attack or something.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. This, even though this film feels fairly realistic, if you follow the rules of what we see in the film, it's turns into be more of a fable, as you kind of alluded to earlier, Chrissy, because again, you know, if they just wished away the kid, there would be no problems. You know, I mean, the whole film is basically, like you said, you know, be careful for what you wish for, because without the kid, their problems would be the exact same they were, even if they had all these wishes. In other words, they could wish for money and booze and all that other stuff, but their problems were still the same as they were before they entered the house. It was when
yes,
the kid.
That's true.
Yeah, so when the kid was created, that's when everything went to hell.
As it usually does.
Well, but for different reasons.
The other thing I was going to say, though, was the reveal of her having had, you know, the stillbirths or the miscarriages or whatever in the past was nicely done. Because a lot of times in these movies, you see that the couple has problems. You don't really get a sense of that when they move in. And that was just a refreshing change. You know, we see them moving in and being very playful and very youthful, and you don't really get a sense that maybe something is actually super wrong between them. Not in the first 10 or 15 minutes. You don't, I don't think. Not until actually.
No, and you know, even during the.
What?
I was going to add also, even during the montage where they're even really getting into using the wishes and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I don't think
there's anything wrong with their marriage itself. It's just that she's missing the fact that she had the two miscarriages or stillborns, whatever they are, and she's still desiring a child.
Well, and she also does not feel. I feel like she. They portrayed her as not a complete person because she complete meaning, you know, one of those people who just feels like she doesn't have a life purpose because she has a business doing translations, right? Or she at least does translations on the side.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm, but
yeah.
She says to him, well, what am I going to do while you're painting and everything? I'm just going to sit here and be become a fat housewife. Yeah,
well,
so I feel like she feels like she has no life purpose.
Well,
because
silly that she felt that way because she had opportunities. They were calling her, even though she claimed, well, you're not going to pay me enough. But she was offered jobs to translate, to be a translator for whatever.
Right.
So it's not like she.
But that goes. Yes, but that goes back to what I said earlier, though, about how when people don't. You know, this is her job. She translates. She makes money. But what is her passion in life? Her passion in life was really to have a baby and raise a family. So because she failed at that, whichever one of you that said, you know, the woman always feels like a failure, that's about right. So she failed at that. So now she's like, I have no meaning in my life because I can't raise the child. That was what I wanted to do. That was my path. That was going to be my passion. and now that's gone, so I'm just going to sit here and translate. And there's almost a sense of jealousy that her husband can be passionate about something else. There's a couple of lines there that sort of indicate that maybe she's a little bit jealous of him, that he has this whole passionate, you know, love of his artwork, you know, and she just kind of feels like, well, shit, I have nothing, you know.
Well, and that's the problem, is that he was willing to continue to have children, you know, again, you know, attempt again to get pregnant and whatnot. And again, as Mike mentioned, and you too, Chrissy, obviously, you know, the baby's inside the mother, and when the baby passes or a miscarriage passes, it's probably a different effect than the father. But she was already giving up. She was willing to give up and say, oh, I'm all done. I failed, and that's it, blah, blah, blah. And you figure she didn't have to. That was her decision. Obviously, you'd say, well, he wasn't supportive enough because he should have said, you know, sit her down and, you know, it's okay, we can try again. But I think he tried to do that, and she just refused.
No, it's just that she didn't want to go through the emotional trauma again.
Right.
It's very understandable, given what she is, we can assume from the way it's what I know in real life and from the way it's portrayed in the film, that is a very, very traumatic experience. And she did not want to put herself through that trauma. So if she could just, and she will feel like anybody who is in that position where they feel like they've been a failure at other things and they kind of give up at it, she is not mentally able to do that. And she's going to put the blame on herself, and she feels she's going to fail if they do it again. She gets the shortcut.
So what would she have done if they didn't have a wishing house? Would she not be a translator, just be sitting home and twiddling her thumbs and getting fat, as she said in the movie?
Well, she kind of hinges her future all on her husband's art career. And he's portrayed as a struggling artist who's not really getting anywhere.
You know? Right. Well, again,
I kind of liked his big project he was working on. That was kind of cool.
It was kind of cool. And again, this is only like 2 months. The whole movie takes place in less than 2 months. So, I mean, we don't know if he was going to be successful or not, or he just was working on something. I mean, they didn't really go deep into his projects because they were more focusing on what was going on. And then, of course, he took a month off because he thought they were millionaires until he found out that the money and everything doesn't make it out of the house.
Which makes you wonder, how were they able to pay for, like, other things they would need for necessity?
You wish it.
No, I mean, like, in terms of, like, the property and everything like that.
I imagine
they must have had money somewhere.
Yeah, they had to have some money to begin with. She probably had made some money previously, and he had. And, you know, they're moving. They claim to be upstate New York. In a lot of places upstate New York, the property's not expensive.
And well, they did say it was cheap, too, that it was like a fixer-upper or whatever.
Yeah. And clearly, you know, this is something that was probably a hard sell given its history.
Yeah, that's probably, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the house is magnificent. I mean, whenever you have a hallway that has more than, you know, a handful of doors in it, and that you can actually put furniture in, like a couch or a bookcase, then you know your house is pretty huge. And this was a pretty huge house. So you would think it would be expensive usually, but as Mike mentioned, it was a fixer-upper, and it had a history that kind of gave it a bad, you know, name to the locals.
I will say, maybe they needed to consult the science teacher or something, because I would have just said, wish up a bucket of diamonds, you know, because then you'll have a nice bucket. But also, you bring the diamonds outside and let them age. They last for billions of years. Let them age. They'll certainly last long enough for you to get it to a diamond exchange and get some actual money.
Right. Well, obviously, the house didn't work that way, right? Because the diamond necklace melted away, too, pretty quick.
No, but was the necklace actually diamond, though? Did they say that?
Well, that was a bucket of diamonds they had, right? And
did they?
Well, we're going off the rails.
Yeah, I know.
Well, damn it, I want a wishing house so I can do that. But I did want to say, you know, this, it starts, I said earlier, with the typical haunted house trope of the couple moving in. And I actually spent some time for the first time, as many haunted house movies as I watch, and I'm just used to that. I spent some time thinking about that actual trope. And I think the reason it's a trope is because it's sort of a metaphor for starting over in life and the terrors that people might feel about making big changes in their lives. Mm. Like, even if that change is positive, there's always a fear that something
is
terribly wrong. Yeah, but I mean, I just think the haunted house trope in general, I think that's what it really is underlying. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think it's the trope itself is actually a metaphor for starting over in life but being afraid to make that change because of all the horrible things that could go wrong. In other words, is the place in life that you're in where maybe you're not happy or you're really bored or whatever better than what you could possibly have? Or if you go for something better, are you going to lose everything? And I think that's what this trope is actually about. And what made me think about the trope was this movie, because this movie kind of talks about that. You know, are you just better off not wishing for anything more than you have?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the other thing with the haunted houses and hauntings in general is that, you know, they're all anchored in the past, right? And it's all about, you know, the sins of the past, you know, haunting the present. And, you know, that is then can be seen as a metaphor for our own past actions and experiences affecting our lives. And that's certainly how they end up in this circumstance, right? Their past history and their past sins, their past problems, you know, kind of what put them in this position, because it's what makes her wish for the child.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the reason, the thing, right? I mean, her demons is what made everything go to hell, because even though he finds out that everything deteriorates when it leaves the house, that sucks. It's still not the end of the world as they know it. What it is their life right before they entered the wishing house in the first place. So with you know, some fun stuff now that they have inside the house, if they so desire to stay. But the moment she wishes the kid, that is like the sin, right? That's the thing that causes the whole downfall of their tranquil existence. And their existence prior to the wishing house was fairly tranquil. I mean, obviously, miscarriages or whatever are a terrible thing, but the issues that they had prior to moving in were typical issues that many people have had in their life. You know, so it's not like their life was horrendous or terrible or unhealthy or whatever. It was just a life that was fairly happy with those normal, quote unquote, demons that anybody would have that bothers them. But it's not the end of the world. It was only when she wishes the child, that's when everything goes to hell.
And the moral of the story is children ruin everything.
Well, in this case, yeah, that's for sure.
If I were in this movie, I gotta say, if I were in this movie, it would be the boringest movie ever. Because all I would do, like, anything you wish for has to stay in the house? Okay, cool. So I'm wishing up the sweetest fucking home entertainment system you have ever seen in your life. And all the movies I've ever wanted, and a bunch of popcorn, and I'm good.
Oh, wait, hold on. I'm wishing up an ice cream bar, an unending ice cream bar, because you eat all the ice cream you want, and you run outside, it's all gone. Run down. Fill up again.
That's great. Yeah,
all,
right.
All the food that's
awesome.
Terrible that's for you.
You would never have to diet again.
Exactly.
You would never have to diet ever.
I found the loophole.
You did, Eric. I would wish for tons and tons of wine and get really drunk and then run outside and be sober so I could start over.
And then, you know, you can eat all the Mexican you want and then you don't have to worry about, you know, shitting yourself. So you can just run outside and be like, I'm good.
Worry about shitting yourself every time you have Mexican? See the doctor.
EMI. Oh, my God.
I don't know what's wrong with you. I mean, come on.
No, I can just find it a fucking joke, but seriously. I mean, there are so many fucking loopholes. I mean, that's Chrissy's idea is an alcoholic's wet dream.
Yeah, right? Totally.
All right, so let's talk about the second part of the story, which is, so basically John Doe, who was the murderer of the people in the house prior, and we don't know, no one knows who he is, and he doesn't give his name to anybody, but we find out later when he talks to the husband in the story that he was the son that was wished for by the prior owners from, you know, 50 years ago. And what happened was, is they found out that, and that's where the Nietzsche quote comes in, which is, to become, to be able to live, you have to kill your creator. And so the mother kills the father and then gives the gun to her son and says, kill me, because then you can leave the house. And that's the right. only way you can leave the house is if you kill the people who wished you. And since the mother was obviously insane, where all that mattered was her new boy, she kills the husband, kills her, gets herself killed, and then he gets to leave the house, but of course he gets arrested for murder, and he lands up in a nut house, because obviously every story he's going to say, whether, oh, I was created by my parents from a wish, they're obviously insane. So
right.
he lands up in a nut house. And yet he can survive, even though he came from existence through a wish. And so what happens is the boy begins to become erratic. But the main thing is then he becomes a teenager or a young adult, right? And that's when everything goes to hell. I forget how he became that. Did he go outside himself to do that? Or
yeah.
Yeah, all right. And did he do it intentionally, knowing he would age, or was
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, he figures it out.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly how, but I remember he figured it out.
Right.
Although I gotta say, the whole thing with the there's inconsistency here, and it bugs me.
That's why the film's more of a fable, I guess.
Yeah, had I been more enthralled, I might not have like focused in on it. However. Like, he takes the Van Gogh and slides it out the door, and it turns to dust in, like, 30 seconds. How long does it take a painting to actually age to the point where it turns to dust? A lot longer than a human life, right?
Yeah.
But so then whenever the boy's outside, he only ages a matter of years, like, over a minute. So it seems like, I don't know, maybe different rules for a human. I don't know, but it's
for living things versus dead things.
Yeah, yeah. But it bugs me.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. I mean, that's it. They don't explain it, but that's what I pretty much felt the same as Mike, which is anything that is organic can survive. The aging process isn't as quick as non-organic things, but it is an inconsistency if you really want to look at it deeply, though, which is fair.
Yeah, right? I mean, as someone who's familiar with wish literature, my first thought was when I saw he'd wished for all these famous paintings is that somebody's going to jail.
Right.
Yeah, because, I did too.
That's an old trope. You know, you wish for this thing, and then, of course, it's rather than just conjure it out of thin air or give you a duplicate,
right.
It gets stolen from somebody.
It's like the Fantasy Island movie that we just saw where they wish for the mansion, and then you find out the mansion was owned by the mob, and they want it back.
Right. Spoiler warning.
Wah, wah.
Yeah, absolutely. I was completely unspoiled from this film. So I had no idea that the baby thing was going to be an issue. So yeah, my jaw kind of dropped when I saw the baby because, you know, having seen enough horror movies, all potential problems just were like,
stem from babies.
Fuck.
Right. Yeah. Well, especially one that was wished out of nowhere, right? Like you said, Mike, you prepare easily have two months before you find out you're pregnant if you're not doing the test. And then you have 8 months to prepare. And based off of the way these people were, a pregnancy wouldn't have been a devastating thing. It would have been a happy thing versus a baby just appearing out of nowhere. And it's like, what the fuck?
that's an appropriate reaction if a baby just shows up out of nowhere. Yeah, what the fuck?
Yeah, exactly. That wasn't good. All right, so let's talk about the baby's plan as it gets older. What do you guys think of that?
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
So essentially, every bad decision made by the two parents, miscommunication, and the very fact that this kid can't have a normal life at all can cause a brewing resentment in the child. And, you know, he finds the room and he realizes how much power is in there. He gets into it with Matt when Matt pretty much just says he's not real. And that's not even before the phone call. And so all this leads into a situation where the wife actually tries, almost considers killing herself so Shane can have a life of his own. And things seem as possible worse until she decides against it, returns home, and it almost seems like Shane and Matt have reconciled after he reads him a bedtime story. But we then realize that the kid has bigger ideas in mind as he slips away and gets a hold of the key to the room. And by the next day, they find out that he has made it outside in order to age himself to that of a young man. However, his body has changed to that. His mind, not so much.
Well, he is horny.
Yeah,
that was another thing that didn't quite add up for me. But I guess it's hormones? Well, I can write it off as hormones.
You never read Oedipus?
Well, they do have the explanation. Well, first of all, he's barely 2 months old, age-wise, rather than physical-wise. So he doesn't understand things. And then he also makes the point, which is he says, oh, I saw you and Daddy doing this, so I'm just doing what he does. I thought you would like it. So that kind of makes sense. But then when he starts attacking her and she's saying no or leave me alone, then you know that he's in the mode where he's just thinking of, I guess, the Oedipus thing, Mike, or even worse than that. So
right. Well, you want to kill your father,
your mother, right? Exactly.
In fairness to him, he is 2 months old, so you know, he probably never really had the talk. No one ever explained the idea of the proper way to touch a woman. Not all that, you know. It just consent probably didn't come up a lot. You know, it's
right. He didn't get to surf the web for Pornhub or whatever.
No, but he can conjure up his own porn.
That's true.
Yeah, but he doesn't know what it is. You know, you have to see it first. You go, oh, this is cool. And
that goes all the way back to how his mother has struggled to try and instill any sort of morals or lessons or anything into there. And so he's jumping from one period of, you know, era of, you know, growing up into the next so quickly that his brain is just left far behind. And, you know, so you essentially have this man-child who has his hands on a wish machine.
Yeah, it's a problem.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and that's what I was saying earlier, right? You know, you have an unfully developed brain wishing for things that are cool for a six-year-old but aren't cool for anybody else, you know? I mean, it's not like he's wishing for army guys and Barbie dolls. He's wishing for dragons and vampires type of stuff, you know, or in this case, even things that seem innocuous, like an entire alternate world. But as we see later, that's not a good thing.
See, I thought that was a nice loophole, right? I mean, if I'm stuck in a house, having my own little holodeck would be a nice treat.
Right?
Right, and, right, yeah.
But it also leads up the question, how far you can expand that holodeck.
Right, so then because, you can wish for a yacht. It's just that it's in the opposite
right.
world.
Yeah, but you know, right. first we have the forest, and he makes the snow, and he also has a replica of the house.
Yeah.
Which, you know, Chrissy would just be wishing.
Am I interpreting this correctly? That the duplicate house that he conjured also has a functional wish room?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. What did you say?
In fairness, the duplicate house is in the room.
No, I get it.
So, a wish within a wish.
Yeah, so, okay.
Right. So, right. That's so, the reason why
you would be able to make
trick.
A wish anywhere.
And that's why And that's why there's the big trick at the end when he pretends that he's the father.
He
can walk outside of the house because it's actually the house that's in the
still
the
in the room.
The
yeah.
wish
right.
room.
Yeah.
So what did you say, Mike, about Chrissy would what?
I said you just wish to have Disney World.
I would. I would have Disney World right there.
With no line.
As
no
it is
line.
Now.
Disney World with no line, as it is right now, exactly.
You can essentially just create an entire world within there.
Yeah, you could. And that was one of my, along with the John Doe calling on the phone, that was my other favorite part of this movie. When they went into that room and he had created that world in that room, I was like, that is freaking cool. I was like, that is awesome.
Yeah, that,
really
part,
that part,
and when figured out that he made himself look like the dad, like for a few minutes there, I was just like sitting there going, wait, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
Figured it out eventually, but it took me about 5 minutes to get there. I'm like, wait, what?
I love the little cues that, you know, the way they made suddenly revealing at that.
Yeah, the Chekhov's gun, the Chekhov's ice.
Yeah. the ice. And also,
this is
the
movie about people chewing too loudly.
You know, hot dogs and macaroni and cheese.
I get it now, Eric. But what were you saying about hot dogs and mac and cheese?
Yeah, he was eating everything too was just like a little kid and everything like that.
Yeah, yeah, he's asking for the same food my two daughters always ask for: hot dogs, pizza, mac and cheese, chicken nuggets, French fries. All right, what about the ravioli?
Hamburger.
Oh.
Yeah, no, they don't like hamburgers. But it's weird. I don't know.
Communists.
Kids are kids.
That's what I feel too. Yeah, my kids are commies. Well, they have this weird OCD where pizza's okay.
OCD, right? Huh? I wonder where they get that from.
But you can't have any toppings on the pizza, even though cheese and sauce are in theory toppings. And then if you have
if you don't have cheese and sauce, you don't have pizza. You have
exactly.
You just have bread. So that is a necessary part to make them. See, if you put pepperoni on bread or sauce on bread, it doesn't make it.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, that's a fair point. All right, so maybe my daughters have some sense there. I don't know. But, there was a question I had that was confusing. When the father wakes up and he's notices the wife's gone and he thinks the wife's stuck in the alternate world or the room.
Yeah.
Why didn't he just get the keys and open it? Did
the
guy
locked it from the other side?
But where was the keys that unlocked it from the outside of the room? Didn't he have it in a drawer or something?
No,
the kid took it. Oh, that's right. Because you could lock it from the inside too. See, I didn't know that. Okay, now I understand. Okay, makes sense now. That was bothering me when I was watching the film, but now I get it. Gotcha. Okay, makes sense. So that kid turned out to be a psychopath.
Right.
Maybe
not. It's a major convenience that he somehow learns how to talk. However, given that flaw and everything, who knows how we would be perceived if we were 4 months old in a grown adult body.
Right.
because you haven't had any social conditioning, you haven't had any life lessons. All you know is what a 4 month old knows, which is give me what I want. Right. So yeah, who knows how we would.
Right. So he may, if he was had a normal existence, he may not have been a sociopath. In other words, he was becoming mean and evil not because he was necessarily a sociopath, but because of being only 2 months old and completely.
Yeah, the way I would phrase it is he's not necessarily being evil.
Right.
He's just trying to get what he wants and doesn't understand the rules of society.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you usually have to get to be quite a bit older than 2 months to have to get out of that sociopath stage where you have consideration for others.
People never get there.
No.
And some people never get there. And look, he's sitting there, he's chilling, he's fine, and then the next thing he knows, he's being told he's not allowed to shit in his pants anymore. I mean, that's just that's got to be traumatic for the kid.
I know. I find it highly inconvenient.
Exactly.
Don't be so hard on yourself, Eric.
What do you mean? I got to wipe my own ass now?
Hold on. What are you guys talking about? Aren't you guys at home alone or just home that you don't have to wear pants and so you can just shit on the floor?
Oh, that's true. That is true.
I could, I suppose.
Yeah.
I'm sure Eric uses the litter box.
You can't get mad about it, though. It's like, awesome. Dude, if you're going to do that, at least scoop it up.
Dude, that was awesome. As long as you're not using the flower pots.
Oh, my God. Holy shit. I know the image I have in my head of Eric squatting over a litter box right now is absolutely terrifying.
I'm happy to say, Christy, that has failed the pink elephant test. I cannot picture that. That image did not spring in my mind, and I'm not going to try to force it into my head.
Oh my God! Sure, you want.
Duffy.
You can tell the podcast is
if you're going to start it, I'll take it to the next level.
Quickly deteriorating, very, very quickly.
And in the movie, at least the family and the boy could just wish it away, I guess.
Yeah, there you go.
Anywho.
Obviously, even though the film doesn't play as a fable, it kind of is a fable because we never find out if the house is evil or not. As long as you don't do something stupid and wish for a baby, generally there was no problems. And then, of course, after they get out of the mess, they move out of the house and such. Anything we want to talk about anymore within the house?
Within the house, but I do have a question about that ending because I do.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I read a review and what they said it means, but I still didn't get it because they didn't show what they were implying earlier in the movie.
Right. Well, yeah. And here's the thing is that the very last shot of the movie, they're in a hotel and the husband is coming back from getting food or whatever, and he's not going to get let in, and the wife's not letting him in. You're like, what the fuck is her problem? And then you see her sitting on the bed and she's got a positive pregnancy test in her hand. The implication is that she got pregnant when she was raped by her wish child.
But they never showed it.
Right. It confused me because I got the impression that they were interrupted and that process never completed.
Yeah.
Same here.
It also leaves major questions about the very fact that the child, it was conceived child, if it is Shane, just perished because it's not within the boundaries of the house.
Well, yeah, and that's the other question. Yeah, because, once the once the sperm fertilizes the egg, is it something different? Is it no longer from the house? I don't know.
It felt kind of weirdly placed.
And well, I think the real problem, Abe, is exactly what Eric said and what I felt, which is the movie was kind of implying that she wasn't sure if the pregnancy was from the intercourse she had with her husband, you know, a couple of days earlier, or if she had been raped by her son and she wasn't sure.
Well, yeah, I understand that. But
they didn't show the scene where she actually was raped. They showed that she was assaulted, but then it showed as if it was interrupted.
Yeah. Well, as I said, it's also because it leads to more questions than answers. Because it also throws in that weird shot of the light flickering, and I was just like, "What? Why is it doing that? Like, does that mean that a part of the house is power has been transferred or something weird?"
You know what? It felt like a tacked on ending. It felt like that when it went to black, when they were outside and Shane dies. That's when the movie was supposed
to. That was a better
shot. And it just added that last scene in the hotel. Because of, you know, that's the typical horror, you know, like, you know, we saw the Last House on the Left remake and they threw in the microwave scene or any other scene. You always see these scenes in really good horror films.
It's the question mark at the end of the blob.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, where it comes up, the end.
Question mark.
Question mark. And so this is just a less efficient way of doing the question mark.
Because the scene where, you know, Shane finally dies was such a well-shot and executed end.
Yeah, I actually thought it was the end, and I had already turned away and started...
1 month later.
Yeah, right. And then there was another scene, and I go, what the hell did I just miss? So I put down my computer again, and I rewinded it, and then I saw it go to black, and then it says 1 month later. I go, oh, that's not the end.
It just felt like they wanted you to go, whoa! And instead I just went, what?
I would hope she's left the house sometime in the last month. I mean...
I know! It's like...
Yeah, so that way we'd, you know, I don't know, just for my own peace of mind, I would think, okay, I'm going to walk out of the house. If I don't suddenly, like, give birth in 30 seconds, I'm going to assume it's not his child.
Right.
Exactly. Well, yeah, but they weren't,
but again,
they weren't in the house anymore. They were in a hotel.
That's true.
Right, that's true. But they also didn't show, if they were going to imply that it was possibly Shane's child, they didn't show... Or imply the sexual assault actually took place. I mean, they showed that
it was implied.
It implied that it was going to happen, but then it was implied that it was interrupted, right?
Yeah, because
I thought so.
Because the attack and Matt finally making it to the house was so close together that it seemed like there was not enough time for the attack to be completed.
He could have wished for a turkey baster.
Oh, Jesus. Different movie, Mike.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Don't breathe.
Yeah, but yeah, so I mean, I don't know. I think it fell flat because if I didn't read the reviews to figure out what the hell was that last shot, why was it a big deal, I would have never guessed that she was thinking in her head that she was wondering who was the father.
Mm-hmm.
Because it didn't imply strong enough in the film that there was an unconsensual copulation, or rape, if you prefer. So
I don't think anybody prefers rape, but I get what you mean.
Animal behavior class all over again. they reproduce through forced copulation.
That's just a polite way to say something. So I don't know. Yeah, so I think that ending, that last 2 minutes, was.
I think the credits should have rolled right after they embraced.
Yeah, right.
or they should have implied that she gave the audience a fact that yes, she was raped, and then she could have said something. I can't believe you did that to me, or whatever. Oh, you disgust me, or something, and then we would have said. Then the dun 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 at the end when she's pregnant, we go, oh my god, yeah, is it, who's the father? But
at the same time, it just raises more questions than answers because of the rules of the house.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
That's true, too. Right, right. So even if we did understand the ending, or I should say I understood the ending, if I had understood it, you're right. Then I still would have said, yeah, but what about the rules that were
house
in place
rules.
For the movie? Yeah, exactly. The house rules, the movie rules, the suspension of disbelief within the movie. You know, it doesn't work for that either.
Yeah,
unless
because,
what Eric says, which is it's a new being now, so it doesn't matter. I don't know.
But there's never any kind of hint at how such things could transpire.
Yeah.
So it feels very last minute.
It was I think a bad decision. It was probably suggested by somebody who didn't originally write the movie as a way to leave it open for a sequel. Would be
Maybe.
My guess.
Yeah. I mean, one way we could find out is if the husband wished for paint. And then he used that paint to paint the picture, and then he brought the picture outside and see if the picture survived or not. Or would the paint just dissolve, even though it's a new thing, because he mixed the paint and he created a new, you know.
Or if he wished for the paint and then painted the painting, even if the paint didn't last outside, if he took a picture of the painting, would the picture still exist if he took the painting outside and it disappeared?
That's true.
Whoa!
Wish for a cell phone. Took a picture of it on the cell phone, would the picture still exist even if the cell phone dissolved?
My mind's so blown, man. Oh my god, we're going places.
Dude, I didn't smoke enough weed to even process what you just said.
Indeed.
Oh my goodness.
All right. So, anything else that we wanted to bring up there in the film that we didn't pick up, there were scenes or anything that anybody was thinking of talking about that we didn't talk about, Nathan? All right, I guess not. So before we give our final thoughts, a couple of things. Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I do. It's a general interest podcast called the Askancy Podcast. That's spelled Askancity. You can find it wherever you got this one.
Excellent. And Mike, me and you and Eric do a podcast on a television show?
Yeah, speaking of worlds within worlds, we do the podcast Bullets, Brothels, and Bots, a Westworld podcast covering the HBO TV series Westworld based on the Michael Crichton Westworld film. There is one episode left in this, the third season, and therefore there is one episode left of the podcast, which we will be wrapping up this Monday, and you'll be able to stream sometime in the middle of the first week of May.
That's right. That's right. And the good thing about the podcast is it exists even later. So if you want to stream the whole series in June or July, you can do so. And then all the podcast episodes for all three seasons will be there, and you can listen to them in perpetuity. Is that the word?
Perpetuity.
Perpetuity. That's
yeah, but just don't fault us for being so totally wrong about season one.
Indeed.
You keep on obsessing about that.
Yeah. Well, the best way to listen to our podcast is to watch episode one, then listen to our podcast on episode one, and then watch episode two, and so on and so forth. And then they'll see that we're not fools that didn't know what was going on. They would probably say, yeah, that makes sense. And then at the end, they would be fooled.
I don't think we're fools at all. We were misled intentionally.
Intentionally. Exactly. Yep. Excellent, Mike. I mean, Eric, excellent point. Abe, me and you and Kevin Letts and Barrett are going to be doing a book review episode coming up next week, is it?
Yes, we're going to be doing Whisper in the Dark, a Lovecraft short story. Novella, but just a little thing. It's just we've had to push it back a few times. So everybody has managed to read it, and also because of other things. But hopefully next week we'll have it recorded and out soon.
Absolutely. And Chrissy, once again, you actually have a online magazine that's in, I think, PDF font that people can download and stuff?
Yes, I do. The first issue of 34 Orchard, which is a dark literary magazine, launched this past Saturday. It is available at www.34orchard.com, and that's the number 34, and then Orchard, like an address, like a street address, like on a house. And you can just click on the Issues tab, and the first issue on PDF is available right there. It is available for free. It will always be free. There is a link if you wish to contribute, like $1.99, to help out, as we do pay our writers and our artists. Although, you know, if nobody donates, it's no big deal. It's, you know, it comes out of my paychecks. It's because
don't be a cheap bastard.
Donate. Thank you, Mike, because Mike even donated, and that was really sweet of him. So, yes, go check it out. We have 18 artists and writers from all over the world deliver all of this kind of interesting stuff, and I've gotten wonderful feedback from people on this in that there really is something for everyone. So, you know, it's free. You might as well try it out, and it is designed so that if you wish to print it out and print it double-sided, it will lay out nicely, like it will balance nicely, so that, you know, it's actually, I built it so that people could print it out double-sided, but you don't have to. You can also just read it as a PDF. So head on over there and check it out, and let me know what you think.
All right, very good. And the website once more is 34orchard.com or something like
yep,
that?
Yep, 34orchard.com. So it's the number 34
yep.
And then Orchard, like 34 Orchard Street. But except there's no street. It's 34orchard.com.
All right. Very good. So let's give our final thoughts on this film. So let's start with you, Eric.
I thought it was a mixed bag, but I generally enjoy it. If you already have a subscription to Shudder, I say give it a watch. I wouldn't say sign up for Shudder specifically to watch this.
All right, very good. Abe?
Yeah, I enjoyed the watch. It's flawed. There are some problems with the rules and there's inconsistencies. No film is perfect, but the performances of the cast are strong. So there's some really cool ideas. I really like the location, the main setting, and just the some of the nice bits, how well the reveals are handled. It's still a good watch, but yeah, it's kind of cautious recommendation because it's not going to be for everyone, and it's going to have little things that might have you raise your eyebrow and questions left on that not answered, and of course the tacked on ending. But still, it's a good film, and if you get interested in kind of a monkey's paw thriller, I'd say check it out.
All right, very good. Yeah, for me, I love this film. It was solid film. Obviously, there's some inconsistencies and nitpicks you can pull out, but generally, it was a really good film. If you like ghost stories and stuff like that, I think it's kind of fits in that mold, even though there's no ghost in it. It's kind of that type of horror film rather than, you know, slasher or serial killer or a monster type horror. So depending on what type of horror you like, it also has thriller elements too and mystery elements. So if you like those type of films as well, the acting is fantastic. Olga, definitely shows that she's a really good actress, even though she's always been pinned to be a sex pot in films, because obviously she was a professional model prior to acting. But her acting chops show that she's as good as any leading actress out there, in my opinion. The first half hour, even though Eric kind of was felt it was slow, and Christy may have done so too, I kind of actually enjoyed it a lot because I was very curious to see what the room was. Was there a cult, devil worship, is some sort of dimension to another world or something that we were going to find out. So that whole first 30 minutes actually was somewhat part of my favorite part of the film, because I was wondering what that room was. I mean, finding a hidden room in your house and having weird markings and all this other stuff was kind of cool, I felt. But again, that's my personal taste. High recommend by me, and definitely worth checking out, especially if you have Shudder. It's free, so might as well check it out. Let's go with you, Chrissy.
Well, I really liked this film. I'm kind of with Phil on that. While I recognize the first 30 minutes might be slow for some people, I really did enjoy that part. There's a lot of really fun twists and turns in this. I thought it took a kind of a standard trope and did a couple of different standard tropes, actually, and mashed them all together in a way that was just very interesting. I thought the acting was good. I think there's a little something for everyone. If you want to just sit and be entertained for like an hour and 45 minutes, that was the other thing I liked about this movie. I think in contrast with Eric, I was entertained throughout, but there is that first half hour is just pretty much setting up a framework. So if you're looking for something that's going to get you like balls on, grab you right out of the gate with something really exciting, this is probably not the movie for you. However, like I said, there's a lot of crap out there on Netflix and Shudder. There's a lot of crap. I would not put this in the crap category. So if you're looking to have a little fun for an hour and a half, I definitely recommend this.
All right. Very good. Mike?
Yeah, and some of that crap might even be on Eric's floor now.
No, Mike, it's in the litter box.
It's in the litter box.
No, I don't want to say this is a fun film, because that's really the wrong take. Deep Rising is a fun film. This was an enjoyable film. It was creepy as fuck once you get to the incest thing, because the whole incest thing. But it does take a familiar, well-worn trope and puts a new spin on it. And that's when it really got my interest, because I was kind of liking it. I'll go with what everyone else kind of said. The first 30 minutes or so, once you throw the kid in it, right? Because there's something coming, and I didn't know this. Again, I was completely unspoiled. I just knew it had to do with a room that grants wishes. You're waiting for the shoe to drop, right? Like I was waiting for, the IRS to show up, or the FBI to come and arrest them for stealing masterpieces of art. And then once the baby pops up, well, then you know what the movie's about, and that's really where it really got my interest and cranked it up all the way. So I do like where they went with it. I like the film itself. It is not perfect, but as a nice sort of indie low budget film that you can stream for free if you have the Shudder service, I do give it a recommend.
All right, sounds good. So once again, this is The Room, a different one from the generic title that we hear. It's the ones starring Olga Kuryenko. Christian Volkmann is the director. The film is, as Mike said, on Shudder. It's listed as a 2019 film because of its play at festivals, but it was released everywhere within the past month. It is getting good reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. It is available for free if you are a subscriber to Shudder. And it is definitely a film that would interest folks that enjoy listening to our podcast, I would think. And generally, I think we all liked it, which shows that it isn't necessarily a divisive film like some of the films that some of us love and some of us hate. So that may tell you something, too. So with all that stated, I guess, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right. Thanks for tuning in. Let's talk about The Room. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.